Today to turn to the book of Luke, chapter 7, read very familiar verses, verses 36 through verse 50. We've preached several messages from this passage. In Luke chapter 7, begin reading verse 36, and one of the Pharisees desired him, that is Jesus, that he would eat with him. And he, Jesus, went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meat. And behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment and stood at his feet behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. And when the Pharisee, which had bidden him, saw it, that is, the Pharisee that had invited Jesus, he spake within himself, so he's not speaking out loud, he's thinking within himself, "This man," referring to Jesus, "if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that toucheth him, for she is a sinner." And Jesus answering said unto him, showing that he reads the thoughts, "Simon, I have somewhat to say unto thee." And he said, "Master, say on." "There was a certain creditor which had two debtors. The one owed 500 pence and the other 50. When they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him most?" Simon answered and said, "I suppose that he to whom he forgave most." And he said unto him, "Thou hast rightly judged." And he turned to the woman, so now he's facing this woman, and said unto Simon, he's facing the woman, but he's speaking to Simon, "Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet, but she hath washed my feet with tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss, but this woman, since the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. And he said unto her," that is Jesus, "said unto this woman, thy sins are forgiven. And they that sat at meat with him began to say within themselves," again, they're not speaking out loud, they're thinking, "who is this that forgiveth sins also?" And he said to the woman, "Thy faith hath saved thee, go in peace." Our text begins, verse 36, "And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him." From verse 40, we learn that this man's name is Simon. Now, the Pharisees had no real personal interest in Christ. They had already determined that Jesus Christ was a blasphemer. And you can be sure that this man, Simon, did not invite Jesus into his house out of any personal interest in Christ. But he was more interested in the notoriety of having Christ in his house. And his real thoughts toward Christ are revealed in verse 39. "This man, if he were a prophet..." So there he's revealed his real feelings toward Jesus Christ. Following the opening statement of verse 36, we read a statement of grace and mercy. "And he," Jesus, "went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meat." That's grace. That's mercy. of God. We learn from verse 49 that there were other guests as well. No doubt, many, if not all of them, were Pharisees. So they're sitting at this table, but this isn't what you and I are accustomed to. They're not sitting in chairs like you and I sit in chairs around a table. Their custom in those days, and we need to picture this. Again, the tables were 14 to 18 inches tall. So very short tables. And around these tables, there are couches without backs, without arms. They're elevated at the head. And upon these couches are these individuals in a reclined position, their heads, of course, toward the table, their feet away from the table. And that was the custom. So we need to get that picture in our minds. We tend to picture it as we're used to sitting in chairs around the table, and that's an inaccurate picture. It's also important, or it was also common, for many of the guests to be standing along the walls because the table wasn't big enough to accommodate everybody. And it was also common for uninvited guests to just come in. Because besides Jesus and the other invited guest, we read in verse 37, there was a woman in the city. This takes place in Capernaum. So she was of Capernaum. And it is specifically noted that this woman was a sinner. What that simply means is she was known for her sin. She was considered by the people, and in particular by the Pharisees, to be a very vile and defiling individual. She was marked, she was labeled as the sinful woman, in particular by the Pharisees. We see this again in verse 39. In regards to this woman which was a sinner, we read in verse 37, and behold, a woman which was a sinner. So our attention is drawn to this woman. Again, the word behold is indicative of something startling, something shocking. It is a call for us to focus upon this woman. It is a call for us to give attention to something that is meant to make an impact and leave an impression upon us. In our text, it is not, behold, one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. It is, behold, a woman in the city which was a sinner. So there is Christ. There are the Pharisees. They're reclined around this table eating. Perhaps there are individuals along the walls. And in comes this woman of the city. And what transpired that day in that house is full of instruction. We see what transpired is recorded in verse 37 and verse 38. We see that this woman, when she arrived, we see the effect that it had upon the host, Simon. Had an immediate effect upon him. Just her being there. We see also the effect that her action had upon Simon led Christ to speak the parable of the two debtors. We see that in verse 41 and 42. In this parable, Christ explained the reason for this woman's behavior toward himself. He then proceeded in verse 42 through 47 to make direct application of the parable to Simon, and he did so in the hearing of all that were in the house. In verse 48, he spoke directly to the woman. And then we're told of the effect of what he said to the woman, the effect that it had upon those that were in the house. We see that in verse 49. And then in verse 50, he further encouraged the woman. So the main focus of this message will be upon the act of this woman toward Christ, which we read in verse 37 and 38. What she did was an act of expression. And that'll be our subject this morning, the expression of our life. The expression of our life. Every single one of us here, whether saved or unsaved, our life is an expression. We express something by the way that we live. This woman expressed something very definite by what she did that day. And what she did that day serves as an exhortation to you and I. First of all, the parable that Christ spoke explains the condition of this woman. Again, what this woman did that day is described in verse 37 and verse 38. Who she was and what she did greatly disgusted Simon the Pharisee. Verse 39. He was appalled. He was appalled at her behavior. He was appalled at Christ's behavior, that he did not do something about this woman. This man, he said, referring to Jesus, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that toucheth him. For she is a sinner. Jesus, knowing his thoughts, verse 40, and with regard to those thoughts, spoke the parable in verse 41, in verse 42. In the parable, there are three characters. There is a certain creditor, which of course represents God. And there are two debtors, which represents sinners. Of these two debtors, one owed 500 pence and one owed 50. Speaking of their debt has reference to sin. Concerning these two, we read that they had nothing to pay. Verse 42. And the creditor, God, we read frankly, that means without any strings attached, forgave or absolved them both. And then Jesus asked Simon a question regarding the parable. Which of those two debtors will love that creditor the most? Simon gave his answer in verse 43. I suppose he who was forgiven the most. Jesus responded, thou hast rightly or correctly judged. And then he makes application. In Christ's application of the parable, he draws a very sharp contrast between the behavior of Simon and the behavior of this woman. The application of the parable also serves as a very sharp rebuke to Simon. And also it serves as an explanation of what this woman did, why she did it. Verse 44, we read, "And he turned to the woman and said unto Simon, Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house, thou gavest me no water for my feet, but she hath washed my feet with tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss, but this woman, since the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment." So, the parable is explaining, why did she do these things? Well, remember the question of Christ to Simon immediately following the parable. Which of them will love him most? And Simon's answer, he whom thou forgavest most. And Christ's response, thou hast rightly judged. Then notice verse 47, her sins which are many are forgiven. This woman had been forgiven much, and this explains the foundation of her love to Christ, for she loved much. This woman realized, this woman felt, I have been forgiven. I have been forgiven by Christ, and therefore she loved much. Now when Jesus said to her in verse 48, thy sins are forgiven, that's perfect tense. In other words, it did not happen right then, but it was something that happened in the past and had a continuing effect. And that's made plain from the parable. That the reason this woman did these things was because of her love. And why did she love? Because she had been forgiven so much. Again, she's referred in our text as the woman which was a sinner. And like all of us, she is a sinner by birth. And what that simply means is that she was born guilty. She was born depraved before God. She was born in the filth and the vileness of sin, like every one of us. She was born in corruption and the pollution of sin. She was born under the curse and the condemnation of sin. And like the two debtors in the parable, she was under obligation to a creditor. Everyone that comes into this life is born in sin. And everyone that comes into this life is born under obligation to a creditor, that being God. But like you and I, and like the two debtors, she had nothing to offer for her debt. Nothing. And we came into this world with a sin debt, and with nothing to offer toward that debt. So like all of us, she was a sinner by birth. Like all of us, she was a sinner by practice. She had lived a life of shame. She had lived a life of dishonor. And like all of us outside of the grace of God, she was at enmity with God. She was a rebel against God. She was a child of wrath. She was under the just condemnation of a holy and righteous God. But this woman had been forgiven. And she came to that house that day, overflowing with love, because she realized that she had been forgiven much. She came to that house that day with the realization of the vileness and the filthiness and the wretchedness of her sins. And she came to that house that day realizing that her sins were innumerable, and every one of them were filthy, and every one of them were contrary to God, and every one of them was against God, and every one of them was an act of rebellion against God, and an act of opposition toward God, and against His person, and against His will, and against His holiness, and against His authority. She had a personal realization of what she deserved as a sinner. And she realized that every one of her innumerable sins deserved the almighty wrath of God. And she knew, and she was very much aware of what God's grace had done in her life. And she knew that all of her sins and all the filth and what all of her sins deserved, she knew that they'd all been taken off from her. They'd all been carried away. None of them were going to be placed to her account. They've all been blotted out. They've all been put away. They've all been removed. She came to that house that day realizing that she had been delivered, that she had been rescued from the curse and from the hand of divine justice, and that she had been plucked from the fire. She knew that she had been brought out from the life and the pit of sin. She knew that she'd been washed from the mud and from the slime of sin. She knew that she'd been set free from the dominion and from the bondage of sin. She knew that she had been taken off the broad road that leads to eternal destruction. She knew that she'd been gloriously saved and made anew. You see, she was the one who was forgiven much, and because of that, she loved much. And that's why she did what she did. This is all these things, this forgiveness of sin had been personally experienced by her. It was a reality to her. She had been forgiven much. She loved much. She was conscious. She was very mindful of the fact that she'd been forgiven. And this inspired her spirit to do what she did that day. And what she did that day was an expression that a miracle of grace had taken place in her life. And our lives ought to express that every single day. Every single day, our lives ought to give expression, I am a miracle of God's grace. I am a miracle of God's grace. So let's look at the expression of this woman's act. By the expression of her act, by the expression of our lives, our lives are to articulate something. They are to demonstrate, they are to illustrate something. This woman's act articulated, demonstrated, and illustrated that she had been forgiven much. That she was an object of His grace. Her life expressed that she had a personal interest in Jesus Christ. Notice verse 37. It says, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house. She wasn't invited. And I'm sure that news was all over town that Jesus has gone into the house of Simon. And when this woman, who had been forgiven much and as a result loved much, heard the news, Jesus is in the house of Simon the Pharisee, immediately she was enthused. There was excitement. There was passion. There was a yearning for Him. And what did she do? She headed for that house. She headed for that house. Why? Because she had a personal interest in Jesus Christ. May our life always be an expression of a personal interest in Jesus Christ. May our lives express every day, I have a personal interest in Jesus Christ. Secondly, her life expressed that she had a desire to be near Christ. Again, verse 37, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, what did she do? She went to that house. Why? Because he was there. Because he was there. She did not linger. She did not hesitate. But with fervency and joy and excitement, she went to where Jesus was. You see, in that house was her God. In that house was her Redeemer, her Deliverer. In that house was her Physician, her Shepherd, her Friend, her Hope, her Joy. So when she heard, Jesus is in that house, she's in motion toward Him. She loved much. She loved so much that she was attracted to Him. She was drawn to Him. And oh, may our life always be an expression that we are attracted to Christ, that we are drawn to Christ, and that we have a desire to be wherever He is. And we have a desire to be near Him. That ought to be the expression of her life. Her life also expressed that Jesus was a priority to her. Again, she loved much because she'd been forgiven much. And knowing that in that house of Simon, she had to know that there would be other Pharisees there. And she knew that the Pharisees hated her. That the Pharisees condemned her. And they shunned her. And she knew that if I go into that house, I am going to meet with the frowns of the Pharisees. I am going to see the looks of disgust from the Pharisees. And I am going to hear the critical words of the Pharisees. She knew all of that going in. But she entered that house uninhibited by what others might think of her. What others might say to her. Why? Because they weren't the focus of her life. Jesus was the focus of her life. Jesus was the priority of her life. Notice verse 38. She comes and she brings this box of ointment. And knowing that she'd been forgiven much, verse 38, and stood at His feet, behind Him. She stood at His feet. And she did so knowing that she had been forgiven much. She did so with a heart that was overflowing with love for Him. And as she stood at His feet, What was it that she was focused upon? Christ. No one in that room mattered. She was focused upon Christ. So she comes into the house, and without reservation, she walks over to that table to where Jesus was, and she stood there. We don't know how long she stood there, but it says that she stood at his feet, and all the looks of disgust as she stood there. But she wasn't paying any attention to all the Pharisees around that table. Her focus was upon Jesus Christ. He was the priority. So as she stands there with glaring eyes upon her, it was her focus, he was her focus and priority. She stood at his feet behind him. Her mind and her heart is fully absorbed and taken up with Christ. Her mind wasn't on the people. Oh, may our life always articulate and demonstrate and illustrate that He's the priority of our life. That it is Him that we are absorbed with. We also see that her life expressed that she had been abundantly blessed by Him. Personally aware that she had been forgiven much, and with a heart overflowing with love for him, she stood at his feet behind him. She stands there in great humility. Great humility. She didn't come into that house of pride. She came with great humility. She stood at his feet with deep conviction, with deep assurance, he's the reason that I'm so blessed. She stands there and she's thinking, he's the reason. Because of him, my sins have been forgiven. And oh, may our life always express, because of him, I'm blessed. Because of Jesus, I'm blessed. As she stands at his feet, again, we don't know how long she stood there. But as she stands there, her emotions were stirred. I mean, how can you stand at Jesus' feet and not be stirred? Her emotions were stirred and she starts weeping. When she thought of him, she thought of the sins of her life and what she had done in her life and what he had done for her. She was overcome. And she began to weep. In her weeping, she is expressing a tenderness of heart for him. And oh, may our lives always articulate and illustrate that we have a tender heart for him. We also see that as she thought upon her sins, she wept. She thought upon whom she sinned against, she wept. And she thought upon his amazing love and grace and mercy that reached her in her sins and in her unworthy state, she wept. She wept and wept and wept. And as she's looking at his feet, she can't help but notice that no one had washed his feet. She sees the dirt on his feet and the tears are falling. And no doubt the thought crossed her mind that said, I can use these tears to clean his feet. A courtesy that had not been given to Christ. Christ made that plain to Simon. So what does she do? It says that she began to wash his feet with tears. She had no basin. She had no water. But her tears were enough to wash his feet. She rained tears on his feet. She had no towel. So she takes her hair down. She had long hair. There's another message there. Up in a bun, probably. She takes her hair down and she begins to clean his feet with her hair. By this time, she's no longer standing. She's down on her knees to reach his feet. She begins to clean his feet with her hair. She begins to dry his feet with her hair. And then thinking upon all the sins that had been forgiven, the life that she had lived, and what he had done in her life, it says that she kissed his feet. Jesus said she didn't cease to kiss my feet. In other words, she kissed him over and over and over again. In all of this, she was expressing a shameless emotion and affection in what she did. Again, as she stood there at his feet, she was overcome with emotion. And after washing his feet, drying his feet, she broke open that box of ointment. And it says that she anointed his feet with the ointment. In all of this, what she's doing is she is expressing her thanks to the Lord. Our lives every day ought to be an expression of thanks to the Lord. Our lives every day ought to articulate, thank you, Jesus, for what you've done. All of this was an expression of her adoration and her honor for him. And oh, may our lives always articulate an adoration for the Lord and an honor for the Lord. In all of this, she's expressing also her absolute surrender to him. She's at his feet. She's content at his feet. And oh, may our life always express that we are his and that we are absolutely surrendered to him. Was she not also expressing, Lord, you're worthy of everything. You're worthy of all this ointment. You're worthy of all. And again, may our lives articulate just that. He's worthy of all. He's worthy of everything. For you and I that are saved, when we think of the fact that Jesus stepped out of eternity into this sinful world for us, and we follow his life through the Gospels, obeying every law of God, living a perfect life. What he was doing there, he was weaving us a robe of righteousness that we wear today. And then we see him taking all of our sin upon himself, going to Calvary to pay our sin bill. How can we not love him much? The one who realizes that they've been forgiven much loves much. Love is not an emotion that you and I create. It's a result. And it is the result of the realization, He saved my soul. That's why it's good every day to think about that. Saved. He saved me. Because that feeds love. And what does love do? Love serves. That's what Jesus was explaining in the parable and in explaining this woman's act. When we think of the fact that Jesus paid all the debt I owe, paid it all, washed us white as snow, all because of Him, how can we not love Him much? All because of Jesus, I, a hell-deserving sinner, am on my way to heaven. And my life and your life ought to articulate, ought to demonstrate, and ought to illustrate Him. Him. Who cares about the glares of the world? That's not our focus. That's not to be our focus. Someone mistreats you in the church, or you think they have. That's not your focus. Or it shouldn't be. We come into the house of God, and our focus is upon Him. And we're standing at His feet. And as we stand there, if we're completely focused upon Him and what He's done in our life, you can't help but be overcome. And then the next thing you know, you're doing something to serve Him. So all that our lives would articulate Jesus Christ. That's true when we walk in these doors. That's true when we walk out these doors. That's true when you go to work tomorrow. That's true when you have recreation or whatever you're doing. That's true in the home. Our lives are to articulate Him. And oh, when people walk in these doors, they may not like what they see, but that they might see Him through us. Through us. Pharisees didn't like what they saw that day. And the world's not going to like what they see. But that really isn't our concern. Our concern is Him, Jesus Christ. God help us that our lives would articulate what He's done for us, and our lives would articulate Him. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in singing.
276. 276.